Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Be a part of this fine production. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Got Jess on the board. Thank you, Jess. Got a big show lined up for you fine folks. Appreciate you coming around. A little bit of the guest list here. Dr. Harvey Kay, an old friend, a professor emeritus of democracy and justice studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We're going to talk about an economic bill of rights. He's writing a comic about it. You want to get my attention?
Ooh.
Put it in a comic book form with squares and bubbles and action, and I will read it. So Harvey's going to come around at 4:30. Dr. Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils. Dr. Tim!
Oh!
You remember that guy, right?
Good dude.
He's an awesome dude. A friend of ours. We're going to catch up with Tim Slecker. I'm very curious his opinion about Donald Trump eliminating the Department of Justice and putting, you know, I guess what, Senator Ron Johnson in charge. I think Tim will have some, some thoughts on
loud,
that.
Big
opinions. We'll put a quarter in and let him go. And Kevin Munoz, a senior spokesperson for the Harris Walls campaign, of course, debate night. Debate night tonight. Going to go to a party later. Going to meet Maggie at the party with some other friends as well. Looking forward to that. You got any plans, Jess, for the debate tonight?
No. I'll be here till 8. And where are you meeting? Tell me off air.
That's right. I'll tell you all about it. So look forward to that. Any plans? We're curious to know your thoughts regarding this debate. What are your expectations? What are your hopes? What are your fears? What do you think will really, really happen? 855-752-4842. We will get to that with Kevin Munoz as well in the 5:30 hour. I want to start out, anytime I see a Wisconsin legislator, or I guess in this case, a senior senator from the state of Wisconsin quoted in the national press, I always wonder, wow, what's this about? And it never seems to fail that Ron Johnson continues to be a disgrace to this fine state. The story over at the Raw story, Johnson blames Democrats. Get this. This is Senator Johnson blaming Democrats for dividing this nation because they're not endorsing Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. It's the Dems' fault. In case there's any worries, any thoughts, if there's any concern about the division being fomented in this country by politicians, well, if all those Dems would just get in line behind Trump, there would be no problem, right? We do have a little sound of this. We'll share it for the people. And I'm going to wrap this into a larger question, a larger thought for you. But let's hear Senator Johnson, please.
Okay, so I will play this, but just because of what I'm doing professionally right now, I have to tell you that the sound quality is really, really crappy. And
I blame the Republicans.
Right. So that's just my fair warning here. Let's take a listen.
Well, I think we kind of ignore what propaganda comes out of Russia. But, you know, truthfully, I'm highly concerned about the horribly divided nation we have. I've been talking about this for a couple of years. Now, I ran because we were mortgaging our children's future. We're exacerbating that problem, $35 trillion in debt. But recently, I've been seeing the greatest threat to this nation is that we're a horribly divided nation. Let's face it, as President Lincoln, quoting scripture, said that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And it's important to understand, it's not conservatives that are dividing this nation, it's the left.
Yes.
That's what identity politics, critical race theory, I mean, mutilation of children on the altar of transgenderism, all these things are designed to divide our nation so that they can seize more and more power. So no, I'm highly concerned about the horrible political division. Honestly, it's one of the things I find so hopeful about RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard's endorsement of President Trump. That's exactly how you unify and heal this nation. You know, there's differences between those two individuals and President Trump, but they're willing to put those differences aside. President Trump's willing to put the differences aside and embrace the things that they agree on, that bring us together. That is how you unify and heal this nation. So I think those endorsements, far beyond making America healthy again, can really point the way to how you do, in the end, unify and heal this nation. Because conservatives, we want to do that. Democrats will lie and say they want to unify and heal this nation.
Oh,
and yet,
okay.
Almost all their policy prescriptions, yeah. all their rhetoric, literally designed to divide us.
So when he's describing his affinity for unity and the efforts that the Republicans have made to bring people together, he calls Democrats liars. He misrepresents critical race theory. Mm-hmm. He misrepresents the mutilization of children. What? So even in his defense, even in his conversation, because the question was specifically about, you know, the influence of Russia. And Ron would know, man. Ron was over in Russia, I believe, during the 4th of July several years back. Ron knows. Ron, the senator from Wisconsin, was in part of the insurrection. He was part of the soft coup. He was part of the legislative side of it, the fraudulent electors. Hey, Ron, can you get these over to Vice President Mike Pence? Can you help us out? Oh, I only had one 10-second conversation. Oh, I only had a minute conversation. That was only a 10-minute conversation. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Reporter. I can't talk to you. I'm on my phone. Sir, your phone is off. I can see it. You're not talking to anybody. It's difficult to take seriously anything that this guy says. And Ron has been the show a lot, yeah. Man. I mean, I've talked to Ron dozens and dozens of times. He used to bring beer over to Brady Street. I mean, he'd get a six-pack of Miller and a six-pack of Spotted Cow, and he'd have two. He was always responsible in that way. And he'd come around, and Ron loves to talk. Ron loves to engage with the local radios. Man, he has been on put more radio time than I think any politician probably in this state, maybe perhaps besides Scott Walker. But Ron put lots and lots of hours in when he was running against Mandela Barnes in that last election cycle. And of course, look at what was his, again, I understand you're competing, you're running for an elected office, and you're always going to have a competition. And so I get that. But when you blacken up the pictures of your black opponent, make him look darker and scary, if that's your way of unifying, I'm sorry, man, I don't buy it. Talking about the Russian influence, these podcasters, these influencers, and, you know, maybe I'm just out of it. I'm not a podcaster. I listen to the radio once in a while. Just, you know, these guys and girls, these people were getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a month and put out there and had, you know, Russian propaganda, basically, that they were espousing. They brought on people from the different campaigns, brought on people from MAGA and continually pushed that. So the efforts that the excuses, well, hell, you know, I mean, yeah, they might have been influenced by the money. They didn't know where it was coming from. It was from a cutout. It was a different corporation. I mean, if you're getting paid $400,000 a month, I don't know. I kind of think you might want to know who's footing that bill.
Probably.
Are you really that good? I mean,
it depends on, you know, what your standards are. If you really do care about who has control over you. I mean, we had to talk about that yesterday.
Standards are if the check's clear. That's the standard, and they're dying. They're fine. So, okay, maybe they were manipulated. Okay, maybe they didn't know. Okay, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They were the victims of fraud by these other nefarious characters. But does it go to their judgment? Now, do you trust them? I mean, at what point does their ignorance and foolhardy to be caught up in another Russian, oh, it's the Russians, it's Russia, Russia, Russia. Yeah, it's Russia, 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 because they keep trying to influence and people keep cashing those checks. It keeps happening. And from an adversary's point of view, to Ron's biblical quote, a house divided cannot stand, that's the point, Ron. That's the point. And you are part of that. If you don't acknowledge that and you're going to continue to push off, you know, Russian propaganda, and you don't acknowledge it, and you think that when the FBI warned him, Ron Johnson, hey, man, the stuff you're saying, that's like Russian propaganda. Ron thought he was getting set up. Oh, it's the FBI setting me up. It's the FBI. And what is it? Oh, yeah, the Great Depression. Well, yeah, that was an inside job.
It was pretty well planned, Dom.
Everything's an inside job. I'm not being conspiratorial, and I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I can feel it
in my bones.
What, man? I mean, you are in a position of power. Now, whether or not that's deserved, no. But it is there. And some people, maybe not this guy, will respect that position and therefore give credence and weight to those words. So in the whole effort of unity, I mean, maybe Ron should, you know, make it more of an effort to be unified. Now, here in the state of Wisconsin, Hovde, Eric Hovde, the banker from California. I mean, he's, you know,
I was going to say, Wisconsin. Is he in Wisconsin?
You know,
is
he? The guy released a campaign video, an inaugural video, very proud. I am running for Senate. Tells him all the wonderful things he wants to do and why he's doing it. But what he didn't do is say what state he wanted to be senator.
He couldn't remember, Dom.
Ah, there's so many states.
There's like at least 40 of them.
There's like 54, I think. And there's
sounds right.
Or that deck of cards. I don't know. If you count the jokers. Hovde, of course, running against Tammy Baldwin, one of our favorites. Here is what the Journal Sentinel is reporting, that Hovde is calling on Senator Baldwin to disclose her partner's assets and clients over what he said is a potential conflict of interest between the senator and her private wealth advisor partner. Now, Baldwin, however, is not required to disclose such information under current Senate rules. Hovde's campaign on Monday said Baldwin's position in the Senate and her partner Maria Brisbane's work advising ultra-wealthy clients creates the, quote, appearance of significant conflicts of interest, and said the relationship should be investigated. They're dating. She works for Morgan Stanley. What? Hey, you're dating. You're going to date me. So you got to hand over all of your private information from your clients to my girlfriend's political opponent?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not how it works.
You know, I did a stint at Morgan Stanley.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah. Morgan Stanley. Oh, you know, I had all my Series 6 licenses, got my insurance licenses. One thing they would never allow me to do would take that client list with their assets and their investments and hand them over to a
private.
I'm just telling you. Now, that on top of it, I mean, is he getting in front of something? Maybe, as I would point out from the Wis Dems press release, 2 months ago, news broke that Eric Hovde, $3.2 billion California bank, is accepting deposits from foreign banks and governments. Yet Hovde refuses to be honest with Wisconsinites about which foreign countries are depositing into his bank.
Okay, so this is just some projection.
Very concerned about the Morgan Stanley employee girlfriend of Tammy Baldwin, but not a problem, and it's none of your business, Wisconsin, California voters, whoever, where that his money comes from. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. Come back with us, 855-752-4842. Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Be a part, 855-752-4842. Love me some Pearl Jam. Just got to throw a little love out there to my late buddy, Bobby. It is his birthday today. My friend Bob, college roommate, friend, mentor, old man Bob. Can't believe I'm older than him. Passed away years ago. Love you every day, buddy. Think of you all the time. And best to the Poole family as well. 855-752-4842. Apparently, Ron Johnson thinks we need to all just get together and vote for the Republican, and we would have unity, and everything would be just swell. But here in the state of Wisconsin, politics are politics, and Hovde, Eric Hovde, the multimillionaire bank owner with over $3 billion in assets in his bank, has not, you know, laid out whose money it is. He hasn't told us, but he's very concerned about Tammy Baldwin's girlfriend's job, where she's a financial advisor for some wealthy folks. Totally different, not married. She's not required to share her partner's or girlfriend's client list with Eric Hovde. What are you going to try to call him up, Eric, and try to get some money into your account? Like, hey, we need a little bit more. A little more from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on this, then we'll get to you callers. And, of course, Harvey K. coming up at the bottom of the hour. Baldwin's campaign said the Madison Democrat, quote, has followed all ethics guidelines when it comes to her financial disclosure reports. Yeah, I would expect so. And labeled Hovde's demands, quote, an escalation of a line of personal attacks Hovde launched online, a reference to an ad Hovde cut this month on the issue. Eric Hovde's attempt to attack the woman Tammy Baldwin is dating is sad and desperate.
And Baldwin, weird.
It's weird, right?
It's weird. It's weird.
It's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no obligation. There's no reason. There's no, oh, wait, but they're going to try to justify it. Mm-hmm. But what is it about these continual attacks by Republicans on women? They don't trust women to make decisions for themselves, certainly.
Well, you see, our silly little lady brains, they fry out if we try to do anything more than basic math.
Jess, it's so complicated. Just don't worry your pretty little self
about it. I know. I'll just sit here and look pretty.
The men in the study will handle it. Once you bring some brandy out. Yes, yes.
I'll bring your cigars, too.
Oh, my God.
Nonsense.
It is absolutely total nonsense. Let's see. Tammy Baldwin works for the people of Wisconsin, only the people of Wisconsin. Now, Brisbane, this is whom Baldwin has been dating since 2018, is a private wealth advisor at the Brisbane Group, a wealth management team within Morgan Stanley in New York. She manages, quote, custom tailored equity portfolios, according to Morgan Stanley, and works with ultra high net worth clients. Now, attacks from Hovde's team stem from Brisbane's previous work managing a biotechnology mutual fund. The Senate subcommittee Baldwin chairs oversees appropriations to HHS and the National Institutes of Health, which includes biomedical research and engineering. This is the problem. Now, they went through all of this, and this is why they're so concerned. Now, while Brisbane's Morgan Stanley biography says she has previous experience as a biotechnology mutual fund manager, the site makes no mention of current work in the field. Baldwin's campaign told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel it does not know the nature of Maria's portfolio, nor should it.
No.
I think you would be fired if you did. She would be fired from Morgan Stanley. As quoted here at the Journal Sentinel, the code of conduct over at Morgan Stanley lists the identities and clients as confidential information and prohibits employees from sharing such information with internal or external partners. Parties. Now, Baldwin and Brisbane bought a $1.3 million DC condo together in 2021. They split the cost in half, and Baldwin disclosed on her annual ethics report the mortgage she took to cover her half of the cost. Wow, it's like she's actually following the rules.
Amazing.
Mm. Baldwin, in past congressional financial disclosure forms, listed several jointly owned assets, including rental properties and money market accounts, with her previous partner. Her previous partner now, in which she entered a registered domestic partnership with in 2009. Now, the Hovde spokesman this week said Baldwin's potential massive financial conflict of interest leaves more questions than answers and requires additional scrutiny and investigation due to her lack of transparency. The Baldwin's campaign shot back at her multimillionaire opponent, noting Hovde has not said whether he'll divest his holdings from SunWest Bank, where he is CEO. That bank is estimated to have $3.2 billion in assets. A bold Baldwin spokesman said this: no matter how low Eric Hovde goes, voters will not forget about the massive conflict of interest presented by his continued ownership of his $3 billion California bank that receives deposits from unnamed foreign banks and governments.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's just another attack on women.
Yeah. And it's an example of, you know, multiple standards for different people and, you know, fine for me, not for thee.
When are rich white men going to catch a break in this country? 855-75-
It's just so hard to be a rich white man.
4842. Hey, Mark from the SAC, you are up. Happy days, Mark. What do you got for us?
Well, of course, you know, biblically, of course, women are the root of all original sin.
Well, obviously.
And setting aside the whole fact that a woman was actually, you know, needed to bring Jesus into the world, and the women went after all Jesus, you know, closest apostles had all abandoned him. The women were the one that actually stuck around and actually showed up at the tomb the next morning, if you take the Bible as literal truth, that they were the ones that actually stuck it out. I mean, that I mean, this attack on women is just beyond me. I mean, it is just, we should be so over that, and I hope that women are actually taking note of this because Humpty and the whole Republican Party is going after women. And, I mean, I'm surprised Ron Johnson hasn't added his ad hominem attacks on it as well. But, of course, he is with the whole thing that we should all be getting behind Donald Trump because, after all he wants to do is have a national abortion ban and put women back in their place. I mean, what the hell?
I mean, it is. And, you know, Mark, I hope you're right, and I do believe that women are taking note, and I do recognize that not everybody lives and breathes the news every day and the politics and the horse race and the prognostication.
It's probably very good for them, in terms of mental health and all that.
I need to take a little break myself sometimes, Jess.
But I can't do that. I got to know.
We got to know. You know what? I'd rather know. You know, red pill, blue pill. Mm-hmm. I want to know. I always want to know, no matter what. And as we get closer, and I think this debate tonight is going to help. I do believe that there's a lot of folks out there that don't know a lot about Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Donald Trump was the former president. He is a known commodity? I don't know. A commodity kind of gives it too much of a positive
spin.
Right.
He's known.
Yes, he's known. And I think as the pressure builds up and as this change happened with Joe Biden, and as this debate starts, and we're 50, 60 days out from the election, the pressure is going to be getting more and more and more to Donald Trump. And he's going to, I think, continue the slow and gradual slide with his mental issues. Mm-hmm. The guy can't finish sentences. I know they say, well, Kamala Harris, she's not smart. She can't finish sentences. Again, a lot of this kind of projection. I mean, she was a district attorney. She was attorney general. She was a senator from the state of California, most populous state in the country, the fifth largest economy in the world. And those people said, we want her. I think she's qualified. Donald Trump, perhaps less so. We'll see tonight. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. Harvey K coming up next. Stick around. And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for tuning in. I'd like to introduce to you now my friend and next guest, Dr. Harvey K. He's a professor emeritus of democracy and justice studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, an author and a friend. Harvey, great to be with you again, man.
It's great to see you. In fact, what took you so long contacting me?
man. It's been too long, man. But I'm so glad I did. I'm so glad we hooked up again. And I was super excited that you were able to come on this new economic bill of rights. We've talked about it before, but now I'm even more enthused because there's like a comic book about it, man. You got like a comic strip. Harvey, what's going on here, man?
I'll tell you what. I mean, besides the fact that when I was a kid growing up and along the way as an adult, I read comics, there was a comic book creator named Matt Strackbine, also known as, or his name in the business is The Letter Hack. And he contacted me because he has a podcast show, and we had a conversation about my work. At the end of it, he said, wow, wouldn't it be fun if we could do a comic on this work you're doing on the Economic Bill of Rights, 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights? And I thought about it, and we spent the next several weeks just musing about what it could be. And then all of a sudden, we both agreed, instead of worrying about a whole big 90-page comic book or whatever, we would do 10 to 12 pages to get the point across, get it out during this election season, and try to place it, as we have placed it, at Common Dreams, which is an online progressive website. I hope people go to look at it. And what was amazing is we knocked it off. I don't mean we knocked it off, but we got it done in probably like 2 to 3 weeks. And
wow.
We really worked on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. He is, one, he's very talented. Two, he's the most patient person I can imagine working with. Because here in the middle of a page of working on the different panels for the page, I would say, oh, wait a minute. We forgot something really important. We got to go back and start all over again, that kind of thing. Yeah. And he didn't get upset at all. So, in fact, it's a shame I don't have him here with me because he really is really fantastic. And the response to the comic book on the 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights has really been enthusiastic. People keep saying, well, when are you going to bring it out in actual comic book form? Which I'm not sure if we're going to do that or not, but we are going to go ahead to do other similar kinds of things about American history, about American progressive life, American progressive story. And in fact, he and I are going to confer tomorrow morning about where we go from here. So thank you for noting.
It's great. CommonDreams.org. You can find it. We'll put it up on the socials so you can see it. A 21st Century Bill of Rights. Let's dive into that a little bit. What is the content? What are you trying to get across to the readers? What's the message here, Harvey?
Okay, well, let me just give a brief historical note to that. And that is that in 1944, Franklin Roosevelt, in the State of the Union message, called for an economic bill of rights for all Americans. So in other words, standing on the shoulders of the Declaration of Independence and the idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as the American promise, and the original 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights, he said the time had come that Americans had come to realize that a needy person cannot be a free person. And thus he proposed an economic bill of rights for all Americans. Now, notably, he didn't do it just out of the, off the top of his head. He had actually called for surveys in 1943, polls, interviews, asking Americans what they would like to see at the end of the war. And to give you an example, 85% of Americans, that was 95% of Democrats and 75% of Republicans, said they wanted guaranteed national health care.
Wow.
And that's just one example, along with education and decent housing. I mean, a whole host of things. So he thus proposed this economic bill of rights. Now, it was the case. He knew it would not be enacted because the power of the Republicans combined with the Southern Democrats, who at the time, of course, were
at the time, right?
At the time, the white supremacist Southern Democrats, that they would block such things. However, it caught the public's imagination. They had already indicated in their own responses to surveys the kinds of things they wanted. And the labor movement, both the unions in the AFL and the unions of the CIO, American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations, which in those years were separate,
right?
The trades unions and the industrial unions, both federations took hold of it and turned them into national campaigns, along with the National Farmers Union and a new organization on a national scale of sort of working people and celebrities, the National Progressive Civic Action Committee, something like that. And in fact, the idea itself never actually died, so that after the war, Truman sought to create national health care, though he failed because of that conservative coalition I mentioned before. During the 1950s, for example, it was never lower than 50%, the percentage of Americans who wanted guaranteed health care. In the 1960s, the 1960 Democratic Party platform was modeled blatantly, stated right up front on FDR's Economic Bill of Rights. And then in 1965, A. Philip Randolph, the great Black labor and civil rights leader, proposed a freedom budget, which was essentially inspired by the idea of an economic bill of rights. 1968, Martin Luther King Jr., obviously before his tragic assassination, called for an economic bill of rights. The idea never died. And of course, we're talking more recently, 2016 and 2020, though he didn't make as much of it as he could have, he called, Bernie Sanders, that is, called for an economic bill of rights, as did Elizabeth Warren. And so basically, it's what we're trying to do in this comic book, as I have tried to do in articles with Alan Minsky of Progressive Democrats of America, is remind Americans of something which is fundamentally American, and that is the aspiration to create an economic bill of rights, which would include the kinds of things FDR called for, but also guaranteed a right to a job, guaranteed a right to organize and be represented by a labor union in the workplace, and similar kinds of things. I mean, and by the way, we actually had polling done by the organization Data for Progress, and about 70%+, depending on the particulars, wanted what went into what we call the 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights. The shame of it is, okay, and understand, I am voting for Harris unreservedly, okay? The shame of it is that the Democrats have resisted picking it up and basically inviting Americans to embrace this as the alternative to the kind of evils proposed by the Project 2025 that the Republicans are trying to walk away from but have clearly embraced.
Dr. Harvey Kay, the new economic bill of rights. Harvey, you talked about 1968, Martin Luther King Jr., he talked about it. And then Bernie, you know, that's a lot of time between 68 and 16 and 20. I was not into this, man. I mean, when I grew up, I don't remember hearing anything about this. I remember hearing about FDR and you know, of course, the Great Society, these kinds of things. I never, ever heard about this new economic bill of rights that people wanted. And apparently a lot of people still do. Why did that come off the stage, in your opinion, Harvey?
Well, okay. So after World War II, business interests allied with conservative interests of the Republicans and the Southern Democrats, they joined in suppressing the memory of it, truly suppressing the memory of it. During the 1950s, it occasionally came up, but it was not the kind of thing that businessmen and women wanted to hear. They actually spent millions of dollars in the course of the 70s and since trying to suppress the democratic aspirations that, by the way, let's not forget, we've had 50 years of this war on the democratic achievements of the generation of the 30s and the 60s. Let's not forget, what did they target? They targeted the rights of workers, the rights of women, and the rights of people of color, especially African Americans. So we've had these 50 years of this kind of suppression of the aspirations of Americans. And by the way, the Democrats, in the course of those 50 years, retreated from their own tradition. And it's only now, basically because of the efforts of Bernie and Elizabeth Warren back in, 10 years ago or so, that they began to put it back on the agenda. And we saw millions of young people turn out for their kinds of, for those, you know, those ideals. And now what we've seen, despite the fact it's not an economic bill of rights, we've seen the Democrats pay all the more attention to the surge of labor union activism.
Yes. And that, I mean, so bits and pieces. And I get what you're saying. Obviously, these kinds of rights, quote unquote, I mean, there's money. It costs money to do these things. It costs money to provide healthcare for your citizenry. But it's not like that we're pulling new money. There's already money being spent. Is this would be reallocated? Do you think that there's an additional cost for a national healthcare plan? Do you think there's an additional cost, Harvey, for a guaranteed, quote unquote, guaranteed job? How do you practically see something like that working out?
Well, healthcare alone, it always astonishes me that people can't conceive of the possibility that if you socialize healthcare, you're creating
Socializing of the healthcare, because the federal government gets it, government employees get it, the army gets it. You know, if you're on Medicare, you get it. If you're on Medicaid, you get it. There's probably a third of the country in some way, some form, in my off, you know, the napkin calculation, Harvey, is getting some sort of quote unquote socialized healthcare.
Exactly. First of all, it's the moral thing to do, but it's also very much economically feasible. You know, Bernie was challenged back in 2020 on the debate stage. Was he trying to bankrupt America? And what he really should have done is both things. First of all, he should have made clear that that's exactly what they tried to do in 1935 when FDR and the Democrats enacted Social Security. It's going to bankrupt.
Right.
Number one.
Yes.
Okay. Number one. By the way, FDR, now I get to number two. FDR wanted national health care as part of Social Security in 1935. But the American Medical Association and corporate interests didn't want it. Now, why did they not want it? I mean, they didn't want it because as long as workers did not have the kinds of things they wanted, they were in some ways disabled or handicapped.
Beholden.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So now, nowadays, imagine the kinds of monies that are spent by these insurance companies advertising their product, by the drug companies advertising their product. I mean, I don't have the figures, but it's clear to me that if you could literally socialize create some kind of equality and equity in healthcare, you'd be saving money because the millions and billions that are going into these corporations would no longer have to go into these corporations.
Well, it was always when I was an employer, Harvey, and you know, healthcare and these things came up, it was always a discussion of, oh, it's a social compact between, you know, corporations. And I never bought it. You know, no one goes into business, Harvey, no one I know in any business I've ever been associated with to provide healthcare for their employees. I mean, that is not a job for selling widgets or a service. It is a cost of doing business, and if they could spin it off, they would absolutely be happy to do so. So where do you think this goes, at least on the healthcare side, Harvey? You know, Bernie's been a big proponent. We've been fans of Bernie for a long time. But, you know, who's picking up that reign? Who's going to run with this baton, Harvey?
Well, I'm. Let's put it this way. If this is going to happen, if we're going to start moving in the direction of social democracy, the kinds of things Americans want, then it's going to have to be the case that we get this resurgent labor movement with the, you know, with the likes of Sean Fain, Sarah Nelson, and others, basically not simply to be emphasizing the imperative of organizing and the imperative of workers' rights in the workplace, but also that these folks are going to have to start talking about the fact that the labor movement actively supports an economic bill of rights for all Americans and not merely for the workers who have the benefits of labor unions.
That will sell. Harvey J.K., Dr. Harvey, we appreciate you coming around. He is a professor emeritus of democracy and justice studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He is a friend of ours. You can find him on the Twitter at Harvey J.K. That's K-A-Y-E. And the new comic strip, man. Find it up at commondreams.org. It's great. I'm going to share this, and I'm looking forward to talking with folks about this. Harvey, you're a treasure. Thanks for coming around. I look forward to keeping up touching base with you and having these conversations going forward.
Anytime, Dom. I'm waiting the next invitation.
All right. Harvey K., our friend, folks, the Dom Salvia Show. Come back with us, 855-752-4842. Thanks, Harvey. To the Dom Salvia Show. Be a part, 855-752-4842. I want to thank Dr. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy Justice Studies over at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Love talking to Harvey, man. You know, the energy and the history, I certainly appreciate his perspective. And I know it seems like a lot. A guaranteed, you know, job. Oh, how are you going to do that? Well, guaranteed healthcare. Oh, how are you going to do that? You know, everything, as he mentioned, oh, Social Security is going to bankrupt us. What they said in the 30s. All these, we can't possibly do this. We can't possibly do that. Yeah, you know, apparently we can. We can. We absolutely can. And we can afford it. We can. We do this already, as mentioned to Harvey, with the socialized medicine that the American people are on right now. You know, I can't wait to get a little bit older. I'm going to be Earl's age, you know. Maybe I'll be able to get to my Medicare.
At the rate things are going, you're going to have to be Earl plus a little bit.
Well, that's what they say. Keep raising the age.
Yep.
And, of course, you know, the technology, the costs continue to go up. I mean, medicine today is certainly not the medicine from the 30s. Thank God, but with Medicare, with Medicaid, with, you know, the folks in the federal government, the state governments, and folks in the armed services, and folks that, you know, work in the judiciary and state, and all these different parts, we have 100 million people in some way somehow getting their insurance through socialized medicine. To say that this couldn't happen on a grander, more larger scale is preposterous. And to Harvey's point, I don't think even in Europe they allow for the pharmaceutical companies to put their ads out on the television.
They don't. Or the radio. America is unique in that, and it is
ask your
horrible.
Doctor. do you have a little bit of extra flab under your chin? Well, ask your doctor about this. And they give you the 30-second, you know, causes bleeding and no sleep and you might die.
Might make things much worse.
But the waddle goes away. You know, it's just, so there's money to be spent and there's money to be made. So, of course, that's why, as the moral thing to do, that would be the way to do it. So I think, and I do appreciate, and I got to know Harvey during 16 when Bernie Sanders was a big proponent of this. And I've come to really appreciate this fact for a couple of reasons that we talked about before. Crudy, you know, his kid was on the spectrum and he didn't have insurance and he couldn't insure his own kid. Now, as a young man, I wasn't worried about getting insurance. You know, it was not my problem. I want to live forever. This is fine. But, you know, all of a sudden a friend of mine has an issue and he can't insure his child. And I don't want to speak out of turn or remember what the specifics, but ultimately I think they end up going on socialized medicine. If you can't get your insurance and you got to go onto some sort of state plan. This was before the insurance companies were forced to accept patients and customers with pre-existing conditions. And I never in my entire world never thought about pre-existing conditions because you know what? I didn't have one. And I know that's very short-sighted, but I wasn't exposed to it, wasn't a thing, wasn't a concern, wasn't on my radar. And there's lots of things in this world that are not on my radar, your radar, you know, other people's radar. That's why we try to continue. Be curious, learn, talk about these issues. If this is something that you think could, you know, potentially happen, something that you could support, well, dig into it a little bit. There's information out there. I'm not talking, you know, QAnon. I'm talking like, here's what we do. Bernie Sanders is very specific about national health care. He's got a plan out there. And to Harvey's point, the current, you know, the Democratic Party, as mentioned, Harris is certainly someone that we're both going to vote for. And I don't know, maybe you got to tack to the middle a little bit on these issues. But I think something like healthcare, you talk about table costs, you know, sitting around the kitchen table, figuring out what you're going to do. You know, talking, you hear the stories of the seniors, you know, splitting their pills and all those kinds of, man, that is tough. Those are some tough realities to deal with. And you know, the older you get, you don't have the ability to go out and just, you know, provide your labor to a job. Good luck getting hired besides anything being a greeter somewhere. If you don't have the education and you're 60, 70 years old. So these are not aspirational wishes. I mean, these are things that can be done. We're already doing them. We just need to do them a little bit more. We need to vote for people who can articulate their vision on it, explain it to the American people that this is not some sort of crazy socialist utopian dream. I mean, this is something that can actually be done and can be done in a cost-effective manner and provide security. Because what are we talking about, this economic bill of rights? He's absolutely right. If you live in fear, you are not secure. If you do not have a roof over your head or the ability to get affordable housing, you are not secure. If you cannot enter the workforce because it's too expensive to have someone raise your kids for you while you provide and go into the workforce, you are not secure. And I think when we think in these kinds of terms, and again, historically as well, these are not outrageous, you know, new age concepts. I mean, we're talking about these things back in the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. This can be done, and it should be done. 855-752-4842. We'll get to some callers in a moment. Just we'll screen. And, of course, we have Dr. Tim Slecker. He is going to come up at the top of the next hour. We're going to talk about education as because, of course, Donald Trump has this bright idea to eliminate the Department of Education and send it back to the states because you know how well that's been working with like abortion and so forth.
Yeah.
Yes. 855-752-4842. Don from the MKE. You are up. Welcome, Don. What do you got for us?
Welcome to your new show.
Thanks, man.
That was a fantastic interview that you had with this Harvey K. I never knew that they wanted health care back in the 30s.
Yeah, right. I know. That's what I'm saying, man. I mean, this is old history.
Why hasn't that passed by now? My God! And not only that, you would be saving money. The deficit would go down. And number two, you know, a lot of these insurance companies, you need a procedure, and the doctor tells you, and they won't cover it. I mean, why should some dummy in an insurance company have dictation over my health?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know, you know? Don. It's a tough thing. Sorry, we don't have a whole lot of time here. We're going to cut the break here shortly, but you're absolutely right. This sliding in of this administration to justify the payments. I mean, it doesn't have to be this way. And we've had opportunities in the past, and we will have opportunities in the future. You know, we educate ourselves on what can be, what was, and what should be, what's moral, what's right, what's economical. Man, the world is our oyster. We just got to get up and work towards these goals. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. Dr. Tim Slacker, Busted Pencils, coming up next. Stick around.